studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Greener, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
Well, last week, we covered an announcement from the Utah Department of Wildlife Resources saying that mountain lion populations within the state were up, so the number of permits available to shoot cougars would increase 7% to a record 565.
Right. Now, controlling mountain lions that attack livestock or become a threat to human populations is somewhat understandable, but shooting and killing the BYU mascot for sport and personal gain is as self-absorbed as it is objectionable.
Yet in Park City, we're observing a growing population of an animal that, many times, also kills simply for sport. And the irony here is that it's a cat.
What?
Feral cats and even domesticated house cats regularly hunt and kill rodents, sure, but also birds, rabbits, chipmunks, and many other small and young native species.
In the first part of the show, we'll talk about the damage feral cats and homeowners who let their house cats run unattended outside due to our local wildlife, its diversity and populations. We'll also discuss what Swanner Preserve is doing to address their feral cat problem and populations.
Then in the second part of the show, Molly Brooks, the Director of Outreach and Communications with Recycle Utah, stops by to discuss, among other things, their upcoming event, the 100 Mile Meal. It's an event that showcases the vegetables, fruits, cheeses, and meat raised by local farmers.
That's right. Now, we don't take phone calls, and we'll probably get a few on this topic, our first topic, during the show. But you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW, This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins at Keller Williams Real Estate. I share KPCW's pride in our community, and so I love supporting the Daily Lost and Found Report on KPCW and their coverage of Park City's fantastic nonprofits. For real estate, it's jhparkcity.com, and for Lost and Found, it's KPCW every day.
Hi, this is Brenda with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage collection, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Thank you for helping to keep Summit County clean and green. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
You too? Okay. Hey, welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And Molly Brooks from Recycle Utah is going to join us in the second part of the show to talk about some of the things going on at Recycle Utah, including their 100-mile meal and why you should attend.
Perfect.
Yes, later on in the show. But first, we wanted to talk about, something that Nell and I think is pretty important.
And this is also a topic that we've gotten some feedback from listeners that they'd be interested in hearing more about.
That's right. And it has to do with cats, domesticated house cats, and more importantly, feral cats. So first, let's get a definition of the two. There's a distinction between the two.
Yeah. That's
so how would you define feral cats?
No. So feral cats are cats that don't necessarily, they don't belong to one home, right? They don't have like an owner, a family, a person. And they're not domesticated. They're not used to people. So
yeah, they don't even want to be around.
They're going to run away from you. They're going to avoid you like the plague. They'll hiss, spit, you know, claw, the whole thing. They're afraid of people, right? They're kind of wild at this point, even though they're non-native species. Domesticated cats are those that, you know, for the most part, live with people, like in a home primarily.
Yeah.
And they're either indoor cats or they sometimes go outside, but they go home to sleep each night. And they're friendly. They'll eat. They'll purr.
So
they'll cuddle.
So domesticated cats, house cats, have a home at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. They go home. Or, you know what? In some cases, no. They're outdoors all night, yeah, and we'll get to that, too. Okay. So Swanner has a challenge with feral cats.
Yeah, so...
These are not Swanner's feral cats, first of all.
Right. This is true. They are not emanating from the preserve. They're not springing up
from the
wetlands. You didn't
raise them. Yeah.
So this first came on our radar as an issue about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm. Somebody told us that they saw feral cats, they saw kittens in that stretch of land kind of between I-80 and some of those areas in New Park, like behind the liquor store and the Silver Mountain Gym. There's like a little strip of kind of grass there. Mm. And people saw some cats there. And then they moved a little closer to like where the condos and Basin Rec are. And we had somebody tell us they saw some cats over there. And eventually we were seeing cats run out onto the nature preserve directly behind the Eco Center, which is our home base for our offices and our programs right there in Kimball Junction. And at that point, we kind of had no choice but to start getting involved. And the reason, and we'll get more in depth on this later, is cats, whether they're feral or outside domestic cats that are hunting, have a huge impact on birds.
Birds in particular, but not just
birds. In particular, small mammals, all manner of other, you know, reptiles, amphibians. Those ground nesting birds were one of our major concerns. Those populations can be a little bit more fragile. And we also have huge numbers of migratory birds that come through this area. So you get these really cool neotropical migratory species and these shorebirds and birds that come not in large numbers, and they'll nest, and they may nest on the ground.
Right.
So anyway, lots to think about there, and we were really concerned about that impact on the local ecosystem. So we started doing our research as far as what to do, you know, calling around to local places, and there really was nobody that could say, oh yeah, okay, we'll handle a trap, neuter, release. The groups that did it didn't work in this area. The groups that work in this area, you know, you might think of like Nuzzles and Co. Mm-hmm. or the Summit County Animal Control. They didn't have the bandwidth to say, oh yeah, we'll come trap in your one area and then we'll neuter them, then we'll release them. That's like, it's a really labor intensive process.
Right.
And Nuzzles can't accept like feral animals, or at least couldn't at the time several years ago. They needed them to be sort of domesticated before they were able to adopt them. And so we kind of thought, well, this is up to us. And Brittany Ingalls, our conservation coordinator, and I put our heads together and started a trap neuter release program. So the way this works is you get an animal trap, and we worked with Summit County Animal Control, who provided those for us, which was awesome. And, you know, these animals, in our experience, were not particularly hard to trap. Really difficult. They're not hard to trap. They weren't in our experience because they were hungry. You know, you put some treats, right? Food in the back of that trap, and if they weren't familiar with it, they would walk right on in. So,
okay. All right. So stop there.
Yeah.
I got a couple questions. Okay. You're pulling a Brian McInerney on me.
Yeah. I know what to cover. I'm just going to keep going.
We got some more time. So let's step back to, you say there are a problem particularly with birds, ground nesting birds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming small birds more than large birds. So give us an example, if you can, what kind of damage were they doing? What was the evidence that they were harming these populations?
So it's really hard to like know exactly how many birds or mammals they're killing.
Right.
It's not like we had a count on that front, but what we did know is that we would see them kind of heading out on the preserve to hunt, prowling through the willows where we see a lot of nesting birds alongside the streams, places like that. And then sort of like heading back, they would skitter back across kind of the path. And a lot of them were actually living under decks of
home,
adjoining
local
homes, those condos.
And you say, were they like, do they hunt in packs or are they, do they move in packs? Okay.
No, so it'd be individual cats unless there was a litter of kittens, which we did deal with a couple of times.
Okay. And these look like regular cats otherwise.
Oh,
and
yeah, totally.
Gigantic, huge.
And even like feral cats, like they, you know, cats like keep themselves pretty clean and groomed. Yeah. So for in large part, it's not like they looked like dirty or unkempt. Right. You know, they looked like a house
cat. But otherwise,
they were thin.
They're thin. And otherwise, obviously, uncollared or otherwise, no markings on them that suggest that they're a house cat.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're in there. They're going to. That's what they do. That's what cats do. This is tens of thousands of years of DNA in them that. When they're out, they stalk, they hunt. That's okay. And they're hunting ground species. You said it includes all types of small upland species, sparrows, finches,
a lot of
chickadees,
and waterfowl,
but also shorebirds.
They all nest on the ground.
The sandhill crane?
Many of them
not
nest
the sandhill
the
cranes.
Well, the sandhill cranes do nest on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, the adult sandhill cranes, a cat would be no match for an adult sandhill crane. But for the young is something that we worried about. They're tiny, right? They're tiny little chicks. So.
And they're vulnerable on being on the ground. They got enough troubles to survive without feral cats or house cats being around in those settings.
Right, exactly. They're native predators that they need to think
about. Bobcats or coyotes or other things. Okay. So you don't have any sense of the number of feral cats. You mean, again, it's anecdotal to say that, but they're in and around the preserve.
Yeah. Our guess was that in that periphery area, there were like, and this is a very rough guess, a couple dozen. We had heard, you know, reports of them like, back as far back as sort of like near the Whole Foods and through that whole area. It's just incredibly hard to guess, though, because, you know, they hide their young. But the reports that we were getting were primarily from people saying, like, you know, my neighbor is feeding these cats under their deck. And so that's an issue.
So that's an interesting point because, again, feral cats, they're not interested in being domesticated per se, but they certainly will take the opportunity or to be fed if food is offered to them.
Absolutely.
So obviously one of the big takeaways, and we're going to discuss in a little bit, you know, what can be done about it, but right while we're on it, don't feed them. Don't give them an opportunity to I know that sounds cruel.
At least before they're trapped and neutered.
Okay.
And
so go back to the trapping. So you have a trap. What is it, like a have-a-heart trap or something like that? They go in.
It's pretty basic. You know, they just, when their weight gets to the back of the trap, it triggers the door to close. And so, you know, you'd have some food and some water back there.
Then what happens to them?
Then they need to be taken to the vet to get neutered. And this is where it gets really tricky because, you know, you have to get an appointment right away.
And this is on your dime.
Yeah, it is.
This is on Swanner's dime.
Okay. So it was something that we had to do some fundraising for, and we'll probably continue to have to. But we have to say a huge thanks to some of the local vets for helping us out and keeping costs really low. Powder Paws was a great partner on this. Powder Paws.
Powder Paws.
And it's really tricky. You have to take this cat. You either have to transfer it to something else or leave it in this trap. And if you can get an appointment right away, get the cat neutered.
Wow.
Hang on to it for a minute while it, you know, kind of pulls itself together and then release it again.
And then it gets neutered. But that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. That's kind of a longer term solution in a sense that they're not going to reproduce.
It is.
But you're going to return them.
And that's a question that we get a lot.
Like, you don't drive them out to the Uintas.
Why would you put them back out there? And so cats actually will hold a territory. And so if you have a neutered cat that's holding a territory, that's much better than having an unspayed or neutered cat coming in to that area and, you know, having another litter of young cats. So that's the, I don't know, that's a reasoning behind the trap neuter release.
Right. But that's what you have available to you.
Exactly. I mean, the other option is to euthanize them, which is something that we weren't comfortable
with.
You're not
doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll tell you what. Can you hang around for a little bit?
You know, I'll try to stay till the end of the hour today.
That would be admirable. And we laugh because Nell is the co-host of the show. And we're talking about feral cats. I want to turn our attention to, we're already running out of time. I want your attention to domesticated house cats and the attitudes and the problems they cause and some of the potential ideas to address the damage that they do to our wildlife, our bird and small animal populations. All right, let's do that. Let me take a quick break for some underwriters. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
G'day, it's Ian from Campos Coffee. Us Aussies really love a summer as much as we love supporting KPCW. We've got Nitro Cold Brew on tap, affogatos made with Wasatch Creamery ice cream, and Mamachari kombucha made with our Cascara coffee cherry. Located above the ice rink at Park City Mountain Resort, next to the Adirondack chairs. CamposCoffee.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And we're talking in the first part of the show about feral cats and the fact that, A, they're, of course, in and around Park City. B, we're sharing the story that Swanner Preserve is having, the challenges they're having with feral cat population and the damage they do, not just to the populations of animals, but the diversity of animals. They threaten diversity in a sense that, they kill birds and they kill small animals. They'll go after anything that looks like a prey.
A potential meal.
And that includes rabbits or chipmunks or other, like you say, young adult sandhill cranes and things like that. Anything that they see as a target, well, it's food for them.
Right. For feral cats, it's the next meal, you know.
Okay. And before we get off that and move to house cats, you wanted to mention volunteer opportunities.
Yeah, I wanted to mention a few quick things on that front, just sort of what to do if you see or know about a feral cat. First of all, we can always use volunteers that are willing to help with this because it is labor intensive and we don't have a huge bandwidth to spend on this. If you are feeding a feral cat at your place or you know that a neighbor is, please let us know and we can work with you to figure out the best way to make sure that that cat is neutered and is not out there making more cats.
Right.
And then I also wanted to mention an organization based in Heber, Paws for Life, who has an extensive trap, neuter, and release program and definitely has probably a better setup and more expertise in the animal handling side of this than we do at Swanner, and we're hoping to partner with them. So, if you see something out and about, please let us know, and that'll just help us to address it moving forward. The good news is that we're already seeing a decrease in cats in the area around
right.
At least the eco center.
Again, it's kind of anecdotal in nature, just observations.
Exactly.
You're tagging them.
Yeah.
Collars or something.
We're not tracking,
monitoring
tagging
them with drones or something like that. Okay. Well, I want to spend the last 5 minutes or so on kind of a corollary to this, and that's house cats. And that's house cats who are otherwise domesticated, but owners let them outside. You know, and they open the door and they let their cat go outside for as much as the cat wants to go outside. Mm-hmm. You know, they come back at some point during the day. But when house cats are outside, they also are just genetically predisposed to hunt. They hunt too. And they're hunting the same types of animals that we talked about that feral cats do. Small upland birds, finches, sparrows, baby, young adult, baby robins, baby doves, anything, again, that's smaller than them is a potential prey. Chipmunks, voles, mice, I get it. But they'll also hunt, all manner of small animals. And that's not good, because once the house cat lets let outside, it's a non-native species, in many cases, hunting native species.
And I think that's a great distinction, because I think often in this conversation about cats, people are like, oh, it's natural. They're hunters. That's what cats do. And
cats
it totally
do.
Is.
That's what I
It
hear.
Is what cats do, but
and
they're not native.
They're not
we
native.
We brought them here.
They're not in the food chain, the natural food chain. Mm-hmm. And they're harming population. Here's a little research that was done a few years back by the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute. And this is back in 2013. Again, like you say now, it's difficult to quantify this. But they estimated that cats, domesticated cats, kill between 1.4 and 3.7 billion birds a year just in the U.S. Okay? That's thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of birds a day being killed by house cats out running around. And then they add to that roughly somewhere between 7 and 21 billion small animals. So they do tremendous damage. So this is the amazing thing. We have here in the town municipal codes for dogs, right? And we should. You can't let your dog out unattended, unleashed, uncollared.
Free roaming.
We don't have free roaming dogs. But we have free roaming cats. And I have a problem with that, because actually, imagine this. You have a house that has a dog and a cat, and the homeowner lets their cat outside, like they usually do or want to do, and the cat goes out and kills a baby rabbit, and somebody sees that. Well, that's terrible, but that's not against the law. That doesn't break any codes, because like you said, Nell, that's what cats do, right? that's the attitude of the homeowner. If that same house let out a dog, unattended, unleashed. And in some cases, I see cats running around my neighborhood without even any collars or markings. If a dog got out and killed that same rabbit, well, it would be on the front page of the Park Record. Jay Hamburger would do a three-part expose on, dog kills local rabbit. And so we have a municipal code that says, among other things, Chapter 7 of the Park City Municipal Code, and it's the Summit County Municipal Code, too, I believe. Under nuisance, 7-3-8, says, any owner or person having charge, care, custody, or control of an animal or animals causing a nuisance, as defined below, shall be in violation of this title and subject to the penalties. And they define what they term as nuisance. Okay, any animal which causes damage to property of anyone other than its owner, okay, is a vicious animal as they define vicious. Barks, whines, or howls, or makes other disturbing noises in an excessive, continuous, or untimely fashion. Well, what are some of the cats around me doing at night? Howling, whining, but that's okay. That's okay, according, there's no code against that. Attacks other domestic animals or is determined by the Summit County Department of Animal Control to be a threat to public health, safety. So why can't we just add house cats to these municipal codes? Any dog or house cat can be considered a nuisance. And I'm sorry, I'll get a lot of pushback on that, but house cats do tremendous damage to everyone. Go.
They do. So there's also a couple of things you can do if you have a house cat that you let outside to help prevent it from killing things. Nothing is foolproof. If your cat's a killer, it's going to still kill. However, there are a couple of things that even biologists that study these kinds of things think are successful. One of these is called the cat bib. And it's like a bib that you kind of put around your cat's neck, and you imagine like a bib hanging down from their neck.
Oh, all right.
And
I was picturing a lampshade. but a bib.
And so then essentially, like, if they were to lunge forward and push their front feet out, the bib lifts up as well, and it's much harder for them. They can't just catch a bird.
It slows them down.
The other thing is called, I'm forgetting the name. It's a... I've got it here. It's called a Birds Be Safe collar. And these look like almost a clown collar. They're like a fabric collar that's just a little bit bigger. They're bright colors, and essentially they just enable birds to see the cats better, because cats are camouflaged. They look like natural predators.
They're incredible.
They're so stealthy. So when they're wearing, you know, a patterned, I don't know, red, yellow,
some
and green
type of
collar,
ruffled,
and it's only like maybe like an
early Renaissance looking.
Yeah, it's not even that bulky, and a biologist who's also, or an avian ecologist, a woman named Susan Wilson, did a study on these. She said she had a killer cat, and this actually made a huge, huge difference. So she started working with some other folks, did a study, and she found that cats killed 3.4 times fewer birds over a 12-week period in the fall. And in a spring trial, they took down a whopping 19 times fewer. So these seem like options to decrease that impact. If you have a cat that's out and about, and especially that collar, they really don't like impact
cat. Okay, so. I have another idea. How about a cowbell? A giant cowbell around the cat.
I'm glad you brought this up, Chris, because cats, when they have bells on their collars, are stealthy enough to silence them usually, so they're not they're not super effective. They're less effective than these things.
So
I would
the
just
whole
suggest
bell thing
doing it all. Doing
doesn't.
The bell and the collar.
I remember reading some research where cats were monitored. They had actually little cameras on them, and they discovered that only about a third of the animals that they kill are actually brought back home. So people always think, oh, well, if you didn't bring it home, you didn't bring your kill home, you didn't kill anything. Well, that's not true. In fact, you know, the minority of the kills are actually brought home. So, okay, so.
So birds be safe collar or cat bib. You can Google them.
Cowbell.
They're also. Chris's
a big
suggestion,
cowbell.
Giant cowbell.
If you have other suggestions, write our Facebook page.
Yeah. You can find information about those online.
All right. But seriously, it's a big problem. If hundreds of thousands of birds are killed every day in this country by cats, we can assume that, you know, there's probably hundreds and hundreds of birds that are killed here. And I see little piles of feathers. I had a house cat take a bird right off my feeder during the winter. It was. I went apoplectic. I went to the woman's home. I told her what happened. She assured me that she was going to get a bell collar for them the next day. No, nothing ever happened. And cat owners have to change their behavior on this.
Absolutely.
All right. Hope you get some more volunteers for your feral cat program.
Yeah.
All right.
We're a fun group to work with.
And absolutely. All right. Let's take a break. Let's calm down.
No. We'll take some deep breaths.
Deep breaths. And when we come back, we'll talk with Molly Brooks, the Director of Outreach and Communications for Recycle Utah, about what's going on at RU and their big 100-mile meal event coming up. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Chernia.
And for the second part of the show here, we're going to be speaking with Molly Brooks, the Director of Outreach and Communications with Recycle Utah. Molly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And first up on today's list is a conversation about your 100-mile meal. So the name kind of speaks for itself.
Right.
Tell us about the concept and what inspired you to host this kind of event.
Yeah, so our 100 Mile Meal is a unique fundraiser. A lot of people think of us as Recycle Utah as kind of the recycling center in town, which we are, but our real name is the Park City Conservation Association. So we operate under kind of a larger umbrella of conservation and empowering people to lead sustainable lives. So with this fundraiser, our goal is to help people learn a little bit more about how to make more sustainable food choices. And really, we're focusing specifically on food miles. And food miles are the distance it takes to get from where your food is grown to get to your plate, essentially. And obviously, if that is a large distance, it takes a lot more energy to, you know, to get it there, you know, through transportation, refrigeration, that kind of thing. So for this particular event, we are having a 5-course meal with every last ingredient sourced within 100 miles of the recycling center. So it's kind of a challenge for our chefs. We have chefs from Park City Mountain preparing the meal, and they have to use all of our donations from local farmers and producers and come up with an amazing menu with everything from within 100 miles.
And what might that include? Is it just going to be all like parsley and garlic?
No,
just be nibbling on veggies. That's
right.
All.
Right. So it includes a full array of
right.
vegetables and meats and et cetera.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll have hors d'oeuvres. We'll have a soup course. We'll have a pasta salad course. We'll have grilled pig and grilled lamb. We'll have a lot of grilled vegetables as well. And then they are doing for dessert a berry trifle. You know, it's a pretty extensive menu with it features a lot of local Utah produce,
right.
Sustainably raised meat as well.
Okay.
So tell us who some of the producers are, the people that are making these things. I'm curious to hear about, like, you know, the local pasta or
yeah.
things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the pasta is actually being made by the chef, he's going to be using like eggs from Bill White Farms, local producers. We have Heber Valley Artisan Milk and Cheese.
Mm-hmm.
We have Red Bicycle Breadworks, Taggy's Famous Fruit and Veggies. A lot of produce farms. Riley's Farm Fresh, Slide Ridge Honey. There's not really any like sugar within 100 miles, so honey is our sweetener for our dessert.
Right.
We'll also have like dressing for the salad will be their honey wine vinaigrette. Canyon Meadows Ranch, Renewy Gardens. A lot of different producers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if you meant some of the chefs that are involved in this?
They're all from Park City Mountain.
All from Park
yeah,
City Mountain.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're a culinary team.
And so they're out there
this.
Preparing this meal that day.
Right.
And where is the event being held?
It's going to be in Oakley. It's a private home in Oakley, a beautiful space. We had it there last year. This is our second annual event.
Second annual.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I get there? Do I have to drive 100 miles?
it's not
almost
quite 100 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, so we do have a bus going from Park City to Oakley with limited
okay.
spots. So if you are interested in coming, let me know. My email is molly@recycleutah.org, and I can reserve you a spot on the bus going from Park City to Oakley, or you can drive there yourself. But
okay.
it's great if we can cut down on the number of cars going
absolutely,
up there.
Absolutely, because I was there last year, and there's a lot of cars.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people.
Right.
How many people attended last year?
We had just under 100 attend last year.
Okay, and you're looking for the same number?
We are increasing it this year, so we're thinking about 150 are coming this year.
Wow, 150.
Yeah.
So, but you still have tickets available.
Yeah, we have a few tickets available. It is getting close to being sold out, so if you want to come, I would recommend buying your tickets soon.
And have to ask,
yeah.
how much might these tickets be?
They are $200 a ticket, and then we have $1,500 for tables of eight as well.
$1,500 for tables of eight?
Yeah.
And tables are still available?
Yeah, tables are still available.
Or $200 per ticket?
Yes.
Okay. That's $2 per mile.
Yeah.
I just did that math. I can't
yeah.
help myself. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's all for a good cause. It all goes to recycle.
Right.
To benefit Recycle Utah.
Exactly.
And the operations and services that you provide,
right.
the education and outreach, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's all funding that.
Right.
Okay. So where do I go? I get these tickets online?
Yeah, recycleutah.org. We have tickets. If you go to our homepage, it's right the first thing on the homepage. Click on that, and it will take you to the ticket link so you can register and purchase tickets.
And again, your email is?
Molly. M-O-L-L-Y at recycleutah.org.
Okay, if you have any questions.
Yes.
And you want to reserve a seat on the bus or
right.
otherwise, maybe try to arrange some other carpooling type
yes.
of things with others that are going.
Definitely.
Okay. So that's fantastic. And I'm sorry, when is it?
It is next Saturday, August 12th. Yep. Coming up.
Next Saturday, yeah. So
yeah, August
12th. Tickets still available. Tables at $1,500. Tables
right.
eight for $1,500 still available. And it's next Saturday, August 12th, starting at?
It will start at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, yeah. And it goes until...
Until 9.
And I will... People know that I was there last year, and when the sun goes down, it goes behind the ridge.
Yeah.
It can get cool.
Right.
So bring some... an extra layer to wear.
Yeah.
For dessert, to enjoy your dessert.
Right.
There's no coffee after dessert because there's no local growers.
Right.
So that's the kind of things that they're kind of limited. You mentioned sugar is limited to honey. So these chefs have to cook with not just, you know, the main ingredients, but also the sub ingredients.
Right.
And sugar is honey based.
Yeah. Right. So that was kind of the.
And herbs and spices have to be local, et cetera.
Yeah. Everything is local.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's, I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll cover any other items you have going on at Recycle.
Okay.
Well, I want to find out how things are going at Recycle Utah during the high tourist season of the summer.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
All right. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And Molly Brooks is the Director of Outreach and Communications for Recycle Utah. And she's here to talk just a few more minutes. We talked about the 100-mile meal, and you can go to recycleutah.org to get details on that. Give us a sense of what's happening at Recycle Utah during the summer. You have lots of tourists here. Do they actually come and recycle their paper and plastic and glass while they're here for the week or so?
We do see some tourists. I would say the majority of people that come to the recycling center are locals.
Yeah.
You know, we see the same people there every week.
Every week, they're
recycling. Sometimes they're there hardcore. Every day, multiple times a day.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Recycling junkies.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, we definitely see tourists. I would say the summer season is kind of our busiest season at the recycling center. We have an average of 360 cars visiting us a day throughout the year, but I would definitely say we see more in the summer.
So 400 cars a day is not unusual.
Not unusual at all.
During the summer.
Right.
And the thing is, it's free.
Right.
In effect. I mean, you obviously have a donations box and a giant tip jar, or so to speak, that people can put it in. They should.
Right.
You know, because it costs you.
To recycle that stuff.
You got to find the markets for the paper and the glass and the plastic and the aluminum. And sometimes you end up paying to get rid of your material.
Right.
So please, if you go to recycle, fantastic. Thank you. But drop a few bucks in the donation box to help support their efforts.
Right.
Because you're not just recycling commodities. You're doing education and outreach.
Yeah.
What are you doing during the summer with respect to education and outreach?
We are doing a lot of summer camps. We did a few weeks ago, actually, with Swanner. We did our sustainability camp with them. So that was fun for 4th through 6th graders. They got to learn about a lot of different issues of sustainability. They met with transportation planners from the city. They went to Bill White Farms, a lot of different fun stuff for them. So we're kind of visiting summer camps all over the place and teaching kids there about recycling, about conservation. So it's fun season for us.
And with the announcement of the Arts and Culture District coming to the Bonanza Park area, Recycle Utah is going to have a new home.
We are, yeah.
All right. And you're working on where that new home is going to be, working with Summit County.
Yes.
On where that new home is going to be and the new expanse you might have.
Yes.
The size and the type and what you'll be able to offer.
Yeah.
Wait, are you saying this is within the Arts and Culture District?
No, it's a good point.
Because that's
so you're
going
to have to move. That's right.
Okay.
So that's a good point.
It's
going to be
a
new home.
Wait a minute.
it's exciting.
Yeah. It's going to be somewhere outside or nearby. where it is today. But they're not know for sure.
TBD.
That's what they're working on.
Yeah.
So.
And it's exciting because I think we can hopefully then accept more items than we do. We already accept over 45 items, but we are in a little tiny space.
You're in a tiny space, and traffic can be, when you have 400 cars trying to get in and out of that space, plus trucks coming to pick up materials and stuff,
right.
Everybody using the same, and that can be a bit crowded.
Right.
And almost to the point where maybe some people turn around and say, I'll come back later.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on, and that's news that will be, breaking in the future.
Right.
And we hope you use this Green Earth to help break that news.
Absolutely.
When you learn things.
Yeah.
Okay, Molly. So again, 100 Mile Meal, it's next Saturday.
Yes.
Tickets are still available. Go to recycleutah.org to purchase your ticket or learn more about the meal, or contact you at molly@recycleutah.org.
Yes.
All absolutely. Right. Thanks, Molly.
Yeah, thank you both.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take, No, we're not taking a break.
Yeah, we only have 4 minutes left, and you have important breaking news
over there. Well,
we have
4 minutes because Renee or someone is going to join us to talk
Renee
about...
Renee is going
to join us. To talk about the pledge drive. So I thought that in the interim, I got a news item or two. Unless
Let's
you have one now.
Let's do it, Chris. All right. I talked all morning. Now.
Unbelievable. Good job,
you
too.
Have 3 minutes and 30 seconds remaining.
Oh, all right. Here's a, I like to follow the Arctic sea ice story.
Always.
And here's the latest. As of July 17th, this is from the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado, whose job it is to track Arctic sea ice, Antarctic sea ice extent, and we always talk about this briefly. As of July 17th, Arctic sea ice extent stood at roughly 3 million square miles. This is 653,000 square miles below the 2010 normal. All right?
Can you compare that to like a state size for us? Can you give us a comparison of visual?
No.
All right, give me the number, Chris. What was it again?
It's 3 million square miles. That's what it is now. That sounds like a lot. But the point is, it's 650,000 square miles below normal, which is about 22 to 23% below normal. And that was as of July 17th. Now, it's 3 weeks ahead of schedule. So the melt that they typically see that occurs somewhere in the first week of August or so is already happening in the middle of July. So it's 3 weeks ahead of its normal schedule as far as the melt goes.
And to give kind of a reference for that, you said 650,000 square miles below normal.
Yeah.
Our state is only 85,000 square miles.
Are
so
you really?
this is a huge extent we're looking at. Yeah.
So it's Utah plus Colorado plus it's huge.
Yeah.
It's a large extent. I mean, it's a big ice extent to begin with, but the point is this is tracking near record lows. 2012 was the record low, and if you go on their site, the NSIDC site, you'll see that it's tracking that 2012 record year for low. Okay, and last bit, Hudson Bay is nearly ice-free by mid-July. That, again, is 2 to 3 weeks earlier than normal.
Wow.
But it's in line with what has been observed in recent years. So this is what?
This is just
new normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Another example
the
of
new
how
average.
Shifting normalities mm-hmm. are going on where this seems normal, but it's not normal when you compare it to what was going on 1, 2, or 3 decades ago. So hopefully we'll get another update on that because it really bottoms out, I think somewhere around the first week of September is when the lowest extent is, and then it starts to grow from there. All right, so I don't know how we segue from Arctic sea ice to our next guest.
I know
Renee.
How we can segue. Hello, you guys.
Hi.
So that kind of information that you guys put out every Tuesday on This Green Earth is the kind of information that you guys would not be able to share if it weren't for the KPCW Pledge Drive.
That's right.
Everyone's going, oh no, it's Pledge Drive time.
They know who they're hearing from.
Yep.
This is Renee Bodley.
Hi, everybody.
Brand new
station manager.
Station manager here at KPCW.
And this is my first pledge drive as general manager here at KPCW. So obviously, right? No kidding.
Right.
Here we've been knocking it out of the park with the last two pledge drives. Larry went out on a high note, and he left big shoes to fill.
Right.
So here's why I am on the air right now on August 1st talking about it. When the pledge drive indeed starts on August 21st to August 24th, our Back Alley Bash, that's that big annual summer tradition, that great party that we normally have the Friday after pledge drive. Guess what? It's going to be before pledge drive this year. We thought it would be a good way to get the word out there that pledge drive is happening and get people excited and engaged. Here's one thing that has happened in almost every pledge drive. When we start the pledge drive, people will call and say, oh, I have an item I want to donate to the online auction. Or I have some items I would like to donate that my business would like to donate as part of the premiums people get. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you call and pledge $100, you get a choice of a $50 Wasso gift certificate.
Right.
Or a dining certificate at Sammy's Bistro. You know, those are two businesses that have been great supporters of ours. So we're putting the word out now. If you have a business where you want to donate items to the KPCW pledge drive, or if you want to donate an item to our online auction, give us a call now here at the station, 435-649-9004. Ask to speak to Jennifer Kimball Bailey, our Director of Marketing and Events, or Kim Crittenden, our Director of Development, or me, Renee Bodley.
Okay. And that, and then you'll arrange, work with them.
We'll work with them.
With respect to the donation they'd like to make.
Yeah, and we have a lot of fun during Pledge Drive, and it's a great way to get your business name out there, mm-hmm. especially as a supporter of this great local radio station. And KPCW, I've worked here now for 2 years as a reporter, just recently became GM. I'm thrilled and amazed with how important this station is in our community.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the community bulletin board. I've been in news my entire career, and we do such a great job covering local news in this community. We can't do that. We can't staff this news department. We can't operate the station without all of those great donations that come in during Pledge Drive.
And you're totally right that the businesses and the nonprofits that donate things for the Pledge Drive, you'll hear those names again and again on the air, because every hour we're on there saying, you know, Wasso has given this many gift certificates, you know, talking about the restaurant. So it's a good opportunity to get your name out, absolutely.
And there's another cool thing that we do with some of the businesses. We do challenge grants. Mm-hmm. So you get, you know, Berkshire Hathaway Realtors come in and they've mm-hmm. pledged $2,500 for the hour. And
right.
we need to raise that much money during that hour to meet that challenge grant. We always kick off with All Resort Express and the Park City Transportation Team, because
yes.
they have great deals for airport shuttles. If you want to get to
we
and from there.
Them.
We all need those,
right? We all have
right?
friends visiting. Yep.
Yeah. And so that's always usually the first Monday morning, and they're booked for the Monday morning. And those go pretty quickly. So it's a lot of fun. It comes kind of this infectious atmosphere here during Pledge Drive.
Right.
And we so appreciate the support that we have traditionally gotten. But we wanted to say, hey, if you haven't done it in the past, that doesn't mean you can't do it now. So
is there a theme for this year's Pledge Drive? This
come
edition?
Together. The Beatles song.
Ah.
And there's apparently an Aerosmith version of that as well that Jen
yes.
is thinking about using for
okay.
it. I was like, let's stick with the Beatles version. That might be better. And one of the things that we want to auction off, if you're a big Beatles fan,
mm-hmm.
come in and play your four favorite Beatles songs.
Ooh,
be a DJ for
fun.
Half
like
an hour,
it.
20 minutes. Just we talked about other bands that you could do. We're like, if we did that with Grateful Dead, man, four songs, that would take
yeah.
all day.
So yeah.
let's just keep it with the Beatles and stick with our come together theme. And, you know, that's our theme in February was Better Together.
Mm-hmm.
And we really like that inclusive theme, especially in these divisive times, you know, as everyone says with a voice of doom.
Right.
You know, we work really well together. KPCW makes this community better. The community makes KPCW better. We just are a great group effort here in Park City and some in Wasatch counties. You know, we cover out there to Wasatch County and Heber City, and that was my beat as a reporter. And man, things are growing fast out there. And you heard the three women running for Midway mayor on the local news hour this morning. Or, I'm sorry, yesterday morning. And, you know, they were talking about the change that's happening in the Heber Valley. And we are doing more and more coverage out there. Just the growth is explosive. We're seeing that in Summit County as well with development. And, you know, we're the radio station that keeps everybody informed about those changes.
I thought we were going to do something about the eclipse, since the eclipse is around that
right,
time.
Right, I know.
That's for our specific show, I think. Yeah, we were tasked by Ethel to come up with eclipse-related puns because the total eclipse takes place on the first day of the pledge drive, the day before our show.
So, right, everyone's using the most obvious. Don't be in the dark. Make sure you support KPCW.
Don't let your donation be eclipsed.
Punny.
Don't burn your retina. makes no sense, but seriously, don't burn your retina. Don't look.
Don't stare
so
at the sun.
Maybe you can auction off some glasses on the first day or something like that.
Well, when is it that night? Is it the night of the 21st? Is the eclipse?
It's during the day.
Yeah, it's during the day.
Solar eclipse. Sun's
solar
involved.
Sun out. Thank you for that.
Maybe
it's Monday.
That's why you're not doing
it. Actually, it's Tuesday. It's my Monday because I was off yesterday, so I haven't had enough coffee yet.
Okay. So, it's the first day. It's around 11 o'clock. It starts, remember, we learned last week, it starts somewhere around 11 and it goes to 12:30 or so. And the sun will be covered by the moon roughly 90% here. So we'll get 90% coverage. If you want to get 100% or so or more.
Head north.
If you're not happy with 90% coverage, you've got to go north. So everything's going to get dark here, quite dark, starting around 11 a.m.
That's going to
be
cool.
So whoever's on air,
Man, it better not be a cloudy day.
Oh,
I know.
That's right.
I know.
But here, you know, we're in pretty good shape.
We've got good odds, but
that will be okay.
There's no
and
guarantee.
The library will have a full set of programs and some education and outreach associated, and they'll have glasses for people. Anyway. That's not, you know, let's get back to the pledge drive. Come together.
And, you know, if you're not in Park City, and this is something we always talk about, all the second homeowners here, you can always listen to KPCW streaming online. Say, hey, Alexa, play KPCW, and she'll play KPCW for you.
Perfect.
So you can still participate in our pledge drive, even if you're not in town.
Starting August 21st with the Back Alley Bash the Friday before on Friday the 18th. And if you want to make a donation to the pledge drive or a premium, a gift, you can contact the station.
Contact the station, Jen Kimball, Kim, or Renee, and they'll help you out with that. All right, Renee.
Your listeners are going to step up. I can feel it, guys.
All right.
It's going to be a good one.
They usually do. All right, we got to take one last break. Thanks, Renee, for stopping by.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Go.
Thanks to our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah, Republic Services, Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, Vail Epic Promise, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and of course, listeners like you.
You can join us on Facebook at KPCW, This Green Earth.
This is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City. Remember, we've got your Wasatch back.
Here is NPR News.